It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you heard is uncle-to-be, Kobe Slagle.
That's right.
This is a family show, sometimes more than others.
Or is it's kind of a family
show. As I said to Robert Irvine once, this is kind of a family show. And we have family we have radio family in studio. If you see us on the street, I'll tell you the stories of Kobe and I and how our radio family began. But one of our coworkers is here. She works down the hallway from Kobe, but Stacy Studeville is in town. She's also a semi-regular here whenever we get around the show. Hi, Stacy.
Well, whenever you can meet my serious demands.
Yeah, she, her contracts are brutal. They're like, if you go to, was it Drudge Report? Drudge Report. You know, they have the listings of the
writers
and the rock stars contracts. Yeah, Stacey's in there. It's huge.
Yes, it is.
She wants the Kristen Stewart dartboard and she throws hatchets at it. Not even darts. It's just big. But
I try to throw smiley faces and positive attitudes. But it's always a miss.
Well done, GC. Yeah, ask us on the street. But we also have in studio your son, Mac.
Little Mac, yes.
Little Mac. So, and there's a reason why Mac is here. Well, part of it is because, well, we had to bring him in. So
we had to have Mac.
Where
to
I go,
Stacey.
He goes for a little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. So we're all right with it. But there's an angle to having a baby in studio. What?
For those of you out there listening right now wondering, what's the angle? Matt's about to explain it to
well,
you.
Well, no, we'll do it a little later on because I want to talk about what is new in theaters and what's new on DVD. And, of course, Stacey being kind of at-home mom when not at work, lots of titles on DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about going to the movies with your kids. This is something that we talk about every now and then, but Stacey and I were talking at work recently, and there was something that happened with Maya, your oldest.
Yes, she's four.
Four. Yeah. So, and it was interesting that this has happened, and I've talked to other people, and they've had similar experiences. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. How's that for a cliffhanger?
Building suspense.
That's
I like
right.
it. Isn't that act one of a movie?
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. So, okay, not a whole lot opening in theaters this week. I think everybody's gearing up for grown-up movie season.
The Hobbit's this week, isn't it?
No.
Or is it next week?
That doesn't open until the 17th. Although I attended the press screening of that yesterday.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Yeah, we're early
it's
this
week. It's like December 5th, yes.
Yes.
20 shopping days left.
And, of course, tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow evening and Sunday afternoon, It's a Wonderful Life at Anderson University. Welcome to the shameless plug portion of Film Sociology. Do you have anything you need to shamelessly plug besides your kids, Stacey?
To become a member, call 1-800-233-0020.
Wow. Kobe? Oh, yeah, cool down tomorrow, 7 o'clock.
Yep, 7 o'clock.
What's going to be on the show? Are you doing your Brazilian Christmas show?
I can do one of those.
I know you can, but what's it going to be tomorrow?
I don't know what tomorrow's going to be.
Wow.
You'll just have to tune in and find out.
Yes, like it's like the Blues House Party. Except tomorrow's recorded. Anyway, I could tell you. But
something old, something new, something borrowed, and something bossa nova.
You're stealing my radio bits there. Mine, tomorrow night, we'll have some new releases and a tribute to saxophonist Bobby Keys.
Yes.
Who's played with the likes of the Rolling Stones, Eric Clapton, and so on and so forth. But opening in theaters today, I checked Nuvo, because there was nothing new on the list, but a thriller. It's one of these. It's one of the small independent films that's opening in one theater in Indianapolis, called The Pyramid. And as according to the capsule synopsis in Nouveau, a bunch of archaeologists get lost in a labyrinth beneath a newly discovered pyramid, directed by the gentleman who co-wrote recent remakes of The Hills Have Eyes and Piranha. So that's a big no for Kobe.
Strong no.
Strong no. Definitely, absolutely, positively, but opening in theaters today, and this is happening at the Art House, is what is being called a feminist Western. That's not, and according, once you see the film, that is not entirely the case, but it's called The Homesman, and the film stars Hilary Swank and Tommy Lee Jones. Jones also co-wrote the screenplay and directed it. This is his third time as a director, second time with a feature, because I believe he did one of the Good Old Boys, which I believe was on HBO, and then what was my favorite film of 2005, The Three Burials of Mikita Estrada. And in this one, Swank plays a home woman. She works on the range. She is single. And she is talked into the community or town to take three women who are deemed by Western standards to be mentally unfit, and to take these three women to a hospital in Iowa, a sanitarium, basically. And the only reason why, because normally that would be man's work, but since Hilary Swank is very independent, even though she's looking for a husband, and she can do the job. And along the way, crosses paths with, of course, Western grizzled old coot played by Tommy Lee Jones, and they wind up working together, and they don't sort of like each other at the beginning. Notice I didn't hammer that really hard as I normally do in romantic comedies.
This is a romantic comedy?
No. What I was saying is, when Stacey, let me. I know my word choices are
Tommy
amusing.
Tommy Lee Jones is like 90, isn't he?
He's not 90. 70 at best. Kobe, check Tommy Lee Jones' age. This is part of the film sociology speak, is you know how sometimes you'll see a romantic comedy and they don't like each other.
Right.
Okay, I didn't say it like that.
Right.
I said they're not crazy about each other at first. So it's a little more subtle than bad romantic comedies.
Gotcha.
No, this is a Western. This is definitely a Western. Kobe, you're making faces over there.
I'm just trying to do math. September 15, 1946.
He's not even 70. No, okay. he's 68, 67. So I know he's been around forever.
He's weathered.
He's weathered. That's a good word, weathered.
Thank you.
So anyway, they so Jones and Swank go on and are trying to take these three ladies across the Great Plains to Iowa. And, of course, there are, Kobe, Western things happen.
Tumbleweeds.
Tumbleweeds and adversary and Indians and whatnot. So part of it is and we've seen these characters before. We've seen the independent woman. We've seen the grizzled old coot who's not the most reputable person in the world. But because they're seasoned actors, especially Jones, because obviously he's older. But, you know, Miss Swank has two Oscars on her mantle.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, she's great.
They work really, really well together. And what they have to do in order to take care of these three ladies that are they basically put them in a wagon that's a locked wagon, basically. And part of it is it postpartum depression? Is it mental illness? I mean, and this is by Western standards.
Yeah.
So what was probably... Mac is chiming in. I don't think you're ready for this, sir. Not this one. This is something you could watch. Your parents could watch when you're sleeping. The chemistry between these two, and it is sort of a road picture, but it's a very slow road picture because it's on a cart with horses.
Well, isn't it interesting? So Hilary Swank won one of her Oscars starring opposite of Clint Eastwood.
In Million Dollar Baby, where, yeah, she
another
was a
weathered actor.
Another weathered actor. Yeah. And then she played a man. Well, played a woman posing as a man in Boys Don't Cry.
Yep.
So, but she's, I mean, she's really, really good in this. Mm-hmm. And there's already early talk about having her for the award season. I think Jones is also a possibility. They're really good together. And there's some cameos in this. Folks like John Lithgow, James Spader, Meryl Streep shows up at the end, not really giving away anything. But all of them obviously believed in this project. And Jones is a good director. Jones loves filming, obviously, open spaces. And in this one, like I said, he's played this kind of character before, but there's a vulnerability that he actually allows himself to do. And that's saying a lot for Jones. I know he did that a little bit in Lincoln, because I thought he was going to win Best Supporting Actor that year. Of course, that went to our guy Christoph Waltz, so there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
What?
I said nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with that at all. And by the way, if the rumors are true, he's going to play the next Bond villain. If he's going to play Blofeld, I really hope so. Although I'm already hearing reports that it's not, there are other people up for it. See, this is why I try not to get caught up in casting, but Christoph Waltz is a bad mofo.
Yeah, he is.
So anyway, going back to this is really well done. I think as far as the women issues, as far as Swank's character and the three ladies that she has to return, and the chemistry with Jones, make this really worth checking out.
Now that was a good movie.
And we got some other stuff going on around. Wait a minute, Kobe, is your alma mater, are they in finals week?
Because
they're in finals
not
at Anderson next
no.
week.
No.
Okay. So
no,
they got
we got stuff this week.
What's happening at your alma mater?
Tonight, IU Cinema, Friday, December 5th at 6:30, shortly after this show wraps up, we have The Overnighters.
Okay.
And then tonight at 9:30, When Evening Falls on Bucharest or Metabolism. Foreign language drama comedy this year.
With two titles?
No, that's what it's called. When Evening Falls on Bucharest or Metabolism.
Okay, it's not Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Yeah,
very good.
Like that.
Yep.
Saturday, December 6th, 3 p.m. from 1970 in the City Lights film series Little Big Man.
Ooh, good one. Dustin Hoffman, Faye Dunaway. Really good revisionist Western.
Faye Dunaway's in that?
Faye Dunaway's in 1970. Faye Dunaway is
cool.
In it. Are you a fan of Ms. Dunaway?
Yes, I'm a fan of Ms. Dunaway.
She's not 70s pretty.
No. No.
She's
no.
beyond 70s pretty.
Yes. Yes. Faye Dunaway is timeless.
Wow! Check out the big brain on Kobe. All right, I'm
so in the film sociology pantheon of timelessness.
She's in there.
Pam Grier, Faye Dunaway.
Wow, that high up.
I don't know about that high up because I don't know who else is all in there.
We have to work on that. The Kobe Slagle yeah. high up squad. You got to have five
high
starters.
Up squad.
Yeah, the high up. You have to have five starters and then a bench. Yeah, I can't wait for it all. I'm getting shooting glares from the ladies in the house, from Stacey, but no, it's fine. When did you first discover? What was your first Faye Dunaway film?
This Bonnie and Clyde.
Ooh, that's yeah.
In one of the first iterations of what is Kobe watching.
That's wow. So wait a minute. What is Kobe watching led to your Faye Dunaway fixation?
I wouldn't say I have a fixation because I've not seen her in anything else.
Well, we have to work on that. Thomas Crown Affair, Network. Yeah.
Network.
Mommy,
see Network.
Mommy Dearest, maybe. I'm going to wait. You should wait until watching Mommy Dearest because that might change things.
I can't.
And we have Mommy Dearest news a little later on in the show.
Oh.
Ah. What else is happening at IU Cinema?
So that's at 3 o'clock tomorrow, then 6:30 When Evening Falls on Bucharest or Metabolism again. And then follow that up at 9:30 Saturday night with The Overnighters.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday, December 7th at 3 o'clock from 1984, The Neverending Story.
The original one.
From 1984.
Yep, that's a good one.
Okay.
Emma didn't like it, but I dug it.
Not seen it. And
Wolfgang,
then,
that's one of the films directed by Wolfgang Petersen, who would later do Das Boot. He did Das Boot. He had already done Das Boot, and then he would do In the Line of Fire and Outbreak and others. Mm-hmm. So
there's that at 3, and then 6:30, again, The Overnighters.
Okay, good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Running through December 7th at the Artcraft Theater in Franklin from 1983, because you don't get it enough on TBS, A Christmas Story. Mm-hmm. So you can see that in a theater, like I did in 1983. You, flapping your lips, not thrilled.
I
don't get it
no.
either. Yes. I
watch it every couple years, maybe.
I I'm one of those that I don't get the whole I do get the whole Pam Grier thing. I don't get the whole Christmas Story thing.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think it's an overrated film. I don't think anything is worth showing 24 hours on TNT or TBS. However, there is enough of a this is my annual rant on this. There's enough of a mad, rabid, frothing fan base that acts as if I burned the American flag because I don't like A Christmas Story. It's not even the worst Bob Clark film. Look at Bob Clark's filmography.
But is it that it's not that you don't like, it's not that you dislike it, because you don't dislike it. I'm not crazy about it.
When I first saw it when I was 13, it was whiny, and yeah, you'll kind of shoot your eye out. That's your NPR portion of the show. I have no sympathy for Ralphie. Sorry, kid, you brought it on yourself.
Don't you think it's just nostalgia, though?
Of course it's nostalgia. Yeah. And of course, here also, there's the Indiana connection, because Gene Shepard's from here. So no, and I'm not saying that if Gene Shepard was from Michigan, I would dig it. I probably wouldn't. So
yeah, I don't know. And I really, the ending is just,
I can't even remember.
Although to be fair, I do like having Chinese food on Christmas Day, and New Year's.
And New Year's.
So whenever possible. Anyway, that's happening through December 7th. You can go. By the way, the opinions on this show do not reflect those of WFYI Broadcasting or anybody else. At Cinemark in Greenwood, this is running through December 11th, a week-long run of the original Home Alone.
Oh, that's cool.
So you can go check that out and see where Macaulay Culkin's money went. December 7th at 2 and 7 p.m., a Fathom event. And I know they had a Fathom event yesterday. They did Riff Tracks treatment of Santa Claus, which there are two Mystery Science Theater / Riff Tracks Christmas films. There's Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, which they've done in the past, and that's a great one. And this one is called Santa Claus. It is a Mexican Christmas movie from the 50s where Santa Claus has to match wits with the devil. And of course, the devil is this guy in red pantaloons and bad paint, body paint, and it's Riff Tracks material. And there's a segment where Santa is getting in touch with, and there are songs representing all the different countries all over the world. So you get really stereotypically bad music from China and Africa and France, and yeah. It's a small world. It's terrible. Anyway, go look for that. And Santa Claus, you can watch without the riffs. I mean, it's bizarre. Those two films, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians and this one, are ones that we regularly watch at the Soce House. You're welcome. So Fathom Events on December 7th at 2 and 7 p.m., TCM, Ben Mankiewicz, the one who's not Robert Osborne, is hosting these, so you can watch them. But it's a double feature of 1938's A Christmas Carol and 1945's Christmas in Connecticut. So you can go to fathomevents.com to find out which theaters in town is hosting that. December 8th, 9th, and 11th, Pilot Error, which is happening at the Goodrich, Brownberg, and Hamilton theaters. According to the paragraph in Nouveau, based on a true story indie about a journalist trying to figure out what happened to a plane that went missing during a flight from South America to Paris. December 8th, American Promise, which is about two students from the first of their middle-class African-American families to attend a prestigious Manhattan private school. That's happening at IU Cinema. Yep. And then December 10th, as a part of Indie Film Fest at Sun King Brewing at 7:30 p.m., Caddyshack.
Oh, that's great.
That's cool. Yeah, that's a good one. When Harold Ramis died, I made Emma watch Caddyshack.
Did she like it?
I think she thought it was funny, but she also used the
Lynn. She gave you another hipster. Yeah, I could see why you'd think this is funny.
Was funny in 1980. No, but she said she used Lynn's term, made by boys for boys.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when the two ladies show up, the two girls that Michael O'Keefe is running after, I got disgusted Kermit face from Emma. Like, you like them, don't you? Yeah, I'm afraid so. But I got to inform her that one of the more quotable films in my youth was from Caddyshack.
Mm-hmm.
So, All right. You know what? Let's take a short break. We'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray, and then we'll talk about taking your kids to the movies. A movie that was on Lifetime. Yeah, we're actually talking about a Lifetime movie that Kobe and I watched, not together, and maybe some baby noises. We'll see. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
I love that line.
It's a good one. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point, WFYI.org. If you have a question, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook and Twitter at Matthew Soci, hanging out with Kobe Slagle and Stacey and Max Studeville.
That's right.
Is he out?
No.
Almost?
We're not boring him enough yet.
Okay. we'll get him there. Speaking of
just hang with us. We'll get you there.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get you there. Wait till we get to the DVD and Blu-ray titles. That'll knock
you
out.
Just hang on.
Yes, we have a baby in studio. We heard Tyler Hansborough, and yeah. I just introduced my cast of It's a Wonderful Life at Anderson University. I introduced them to Mr. Hansborough's finest work.
Rendition of Chicken Little.
Chicken Little. Yeah, look it up. It's a thing.
We're at 2.8 points per game, 3.6. rebounds,
wow.
And 0.1 blocks.
He's bringing off the bench intensity.
I guess. That's not a lot of it.
And white basketball. Remember, he's making more money there than he was with the Pistons or with the Pacers.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Probably.
They're going to dump that contract eventually.
Yep.
Okay. new on Blu-ray and DVD, and of course, Stacey with the new baby, renting and
yes,
watching a lot.
I'm perking up here for
okay.
This portion.
The big title this week, and I finally watched it this morning. I missed it when it came out in theaters, and I'm really glad I got to see it, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I really enjoyed the last film, which was, I think, one of the biggest surprises. I always remember being in the studio, being in the theater with the other critics, because we were kind of dreading another reboot of Planet of the Apes. And none of us liked the Tim Burton version that scarred us for quite a while. Dumb.
Was that the one with Jack Black? Oh, wait, no. Never mind. Sorry.
You're right there?
Yep.
We're talking about the Mark Wahlberg version that Tim Burton directed.
Are
you
Wahlberg,
thinking of King
Jack
Kong?
Black.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
To be fair, Andy Serkis is involved with Planet of the Apes and King Kong.
No, because I was clearly...
Obviously.
That's the linkage I was making there.
Well, you should have. You could have played that up, but you blew it. No. So anyway, going back to... So the first one, we were kind of worried, and it was an August feature, because a lot of movies that are released in August, they're not released during summer blockbuster season for a reason. Mm-hmm. And this one was surprisingly well-made, and it was smart, and it was more... It was about the early stages of what would become Planet of the Apes. It was more science gone wrong. And performance artist James Franco was the star of that film, and he was trying to come up with a serum to help cure his father's Alzheimer's. And the father's played by John Lithgow. So, of course, they were trying to out on apes, and of course, in sci-fi fantasy movies, things go horribly, horribly wrong. This one is set 10 years after the last film. So this,
okay.
So
I saw that one. I saw the one that you were with
right.
James Franco.
Did you like it?
I don't remember.
Babies will do that.
Yeah.
Children will do that. Thanks a lot, guys.
When did it come out? I mean,
I think 2 years ago, maybe? Three?
I'm surprised I saw it. But you start describing the plot, and it's like, oh, yeah, I saw that.
I did see that.
Yeah.
Lynn does that from time to time.
Yeah.
So I don't remember that. Honey, I took you to it. It happens.
Oh, yes.
So this one's 10 years after the fact.
Okay.
And now, you know, there was an outbreak that has taken out most of the human population. Apes population has grown. And we go back to San Francisco because that's where the last one was. And we have two camps. We have the apes, of course. Andy Serkis is Caesar, who I'm really, really happy Andy Serkis got top billing for this. Because the guy has done tremendous work from Lord of the Rings to King Kong to the Planet of the Apes films, among others. So well-deserved. He's really good in this. Mm-hmm. And so you have the apes and you have the humans. Of course, Gary Oldman, Kerry Russell, Jason Clarke, the Australian actor who was in Zero Dark Thirty and The Great Gatsby, among others. And they're trying to get to the old dam to get power for the humans. And, of course, humans and apes don't get along. But Caesar and the Jason Clarke character are trying to be diplomatic and help out one another. But, of course, in each camp, there is somebody that wants to just make trouble, make things difficult. And especially in the apes camp, which while I was watching it, and the film's about 2 hours and 10 minutes. It probably could be shortened a little. But... I have to give credit to the screenwriters for making what is a blockbuster version of a Shakespeare story. I have not seen this Shakespearean a blockbuster movie since the first Thor film. Because of the betrayal, because of two camps, and it's not Romeo and Juliet, just two camps who don't get along, and the betrayal that happens with both of them. Not everybody, you know, both camps are trying to learn that not everybody on the other side is evil. Not everyone's out there trying is out to get them, and things go bad on both camps on this case. So
some betrayal things happen.
Shakespearean betrayal things happen in this one. So, and the CG is used really well, especially when obviously with a lot of the apes. And there's a really cool scene at the beginning where they're going after some deer. But it works really well as far as that story. So if you think of it as a Shakespeare story and not – and it also helps that the technology is better. We're not seeing actors with ape masks on like the ones we grew up with and I grew up with in the 70s. I'm the oldest one here. But, yeah, it's done really well. And Oldman doesn't chew a whole lot of scenery, although it's always fun to see Gary Oldman do that. But the battle between the two camps and those relations make this definitely worth renting. So you should go rent that.
Okay.
And maybe rent the first one to remind yourself what also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, and we talked about it a little bit with Danny Boone, but it's now out this week, The 100-Foot Journey.
Yep.
The other food film that came out this year that's not Chef. This is the one with Helen Mirren, and it's a small French countryside village where you have the posh restaurant that's been there for 1,000 years, and a family from India moves across the street and open a restaurant. And it's directed by Lasse Hallström, who gave us Chocolat and Cider House Rules and The Shipping News. And it looks like a It looks like a fairy tale at times. It looks like there are shots in this film that look like a picture book of this beautiful small French village with these two restaurants. And of course, Mirren plays the owner, the manager of the old restaurant, and she doesn't like the people across the street and doesn't get along with the patron saint of the other restaurant. But the Indian restaurant has a hot new young chef who is taking French cooking and adding Indian spices to it. And this is literally and metaphorically happening in this film. So, and of course, the cooking scenes are gorgeous. They are beautiful.
Yeah.
That's because that's what you want in a cooking film. You want, we're not saying food porn, even though I just did. but yeah, beautiful footage on that. And they work well together. The kid in this was also one of the young men that was in the John Hamm film Million Dollar Arm that came out earlier this year. So it's lightweight. It's fun to watch. You're at home. You should go rent that.
I love Helen Mirren, too.
As do I. And, yes. And of course, as a pig male, she is my favorite dish in this film. So also out on DVD and Blu-ray that's new that Kobe won't be watching, As Above, So Below.
Nope.
Under Paris Underground, Bad Things Happening.
Yep.
Scary things.
You don't like horror movies?
No.
I don't really either anymore.
We have kids. So.
Yeah. So every day is scary enough.
Wow. You didn't her that.
No. That's not what I said. No.
And by the way, Kobe doesn't like horror films. Got to add that other syllable just to be on the safe side.
Gotcha.
Are you, so you weren't, you were until you had kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw like kind of the big ones, the big blockbuster ones, the one Paranormal Activity, those like kind of like more mainstream scary movies.
Right.
And then, you know, like when you become the adults in your house that like.
I'm still waiting for that.
The little kids come to you because they're scared. I feel like I can't be scared in my own house anymore. You know, so I don't want, I just, I'm like, why? I don't need to watch scary movies.
Does Frank do that for you, Kobe?
What?
Run to you when Frank's scared or Bianca?
No, he just hides.
Well, he can do that.
Yeah.
He's got lots of hiding places.
Small, gets under things.
Frank's a cat, ladies and gentlemen. He can also has cheeseburger. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray, some old titles, which I didn't know this wasn't out on disc. I'm glad, or on Blu-ray, it is now. The Frank Capra. Speaking of Frank Capra. It's a Wonderful Life, Anderson University this weekend. But on Blu-ray, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart. That's the one reason in Congress. Because the movie is coming out in a few weeks, you can now get on Blu-ray the 1991 filmed stage version of Into the Woods with Bernadette Peters and Joanna Cassidy. Sorry. She's in that as well. Speaking of Tommy Lee Jones, his 1990 action film with Gene Hackman, The Package, is out on Blu-ray, directed by Andy Davis, who gave us The Fugitive. And from 1972, and I remember I talked about this in Into the Archives, but it's now more available, the Sean Connery, Trevor Howard drama, The Offense. Connery plays a burnt-out British detective who finally snaps when interrogating a suspected child molester in the interrogation room. Fun title to talk about with a baby in the room.
Oh, jeez.
But that's okay. Mac can't hear it.
He's sleeping. He's
good.
Fine.
So the other film I can talk about, courtesy of Film Movement, the documentary A Life in Dirty Movies. This is about Joe Sarno, who is 70 years old, and this the film follows he and his wife, who was one of his regular actresses. But this was a guy who made softcore films in the 50s and 60s. But he wanted to make well-made films. Was a huge fan of Bergman, so his use of shadows and lighting and camera movement was more about the emotions of the characters and not just the scenes that everybody talks about. And this is before hardcore came in. So it reminded me of the Burt Reynolds character in Boogie Nights.
Oh yeah,
where he wanted to make art. It just so happens that there was a lot of things going on. And the hardcore scene kind of put Sarno out of business. He wound up directing some films in Sweden, and of course back in the 60s and 70s, it was considered that Swedish films were a lot dirtier. But they had almost at times an educational slant to them, or you'd have footage of a doctor in a lab coat and then cut away to things. Hi, Stacy. Hi, Mac. Mac's asleep. Anyway, but it's interesting to see from a film. If you take any genre of filmmaking and replace it with this, it would still be an interesting documentary.
Yeah.
It just so happens that it's those films. So, but anyway, it was fun to watch, and the fact that he's 70 and he's still trying to make a new film, and he's banging out the script on remember the electronic typewriters with the screen built in?
Yes.
That's what he types the scripts on.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that was fun.
Somebody needs to buy him an iPad.
Yeah, and so there was a scene where his wife, who's, I think, 20 years younger or 10, 15 years younger, but she reads the scripts, and she talks about a moment where she's reading a draft of this new script, and he mentions that something happens in a phone booth. And she has to inform. No, there's no.
What's a phone booth?
Right, exactly. It's a Colin Farrell film. Anyway, so that's out if you're into that sort of thing. But it just a film that made me think of Boogie Nights. That's not bad. So,
right.
Okay, we're gonna get to Dead People We Like because we don't have time for Dead People We Don't Like. Do we have the intro for that?
Yes.
I know I just threw you with that. I just hit you with that because we usually do it later in the show, but
doing our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this
we
week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes. No, we don't. And this week we're going to be tipping the hat to film executive Frank Yablans, who died at the age of 79. Kobe, you're gonna enjoy this because he was an executive at Paramount during the 1970s. Different time. That's right. And this will go back to what we were talking about earlier. Yeah, he was known. I'm reading from the New York Times obit. Kind of made his mark with the selling of the film version of Love Story, because love means never having to say you're sorry. It's also Bianca's intro. Actually, do you have Bianca's intro? We should play that for Stacy. That'll make her ill. anyway, and of course, Love Story became a huge hit, and then he started an association with producer Robert Evans that led to films like The Godfather and Serpico, which I made Kobe watch a long time ago. Peter Bogdanovich's Paper Moon with Tatum O'Neill, The Parallax View, which is a really good film. And then he was out at Paramount by 1975, and then he started to become a producer of films like Silver Streak, The Fury, The Other Side of Midnight, Monsignor. Monsignor's a god-awful film, but it's fun bad. The Star Chamber. One of his last big films that he directed was Congo from 1994. But he also has two screenwriting credits to his name. And this was the other reason why I brought it up. And there are two really noted films from the late 70s and 19, I think it's 1980. But he did the screenplay for North Dallas 40, which is one of my favorite films about football. And dig this. It's about a wide receiver and a quarterback for a team that's not the Dallas Cowboys.
Not the Cowboys?
So not the Cowboys. No, in fact, I think they're the North Dallas Bulls.
Are they the nation's team?
the country's team?
Yeah.
Could be. But the wide receiver is played by Nick Nolte. And the quarterback was played by, at that time, singer Mac Davis. Actually, pretty good in this. So it's not Mac Davis. You have a singer. You have a Southern good old boy quarterback. Not Don Meredith. Not Don Meredith. No. Nope. But it talks about the business side of football. And there's a big argument on, is it a game or is it a business? And you have the coaches that are basically using these guys like props, and there's a great scene where Nolte talks about that that the team is the team and the players are merely the equipment, that they're no different than the helmets and the jock straps and the shoulder pads and all that. It addresses drug use on and off the field, especially when you want to get back into the game. You'll sometimes take whatever it takes to get back out there and win football games. On the football field.
He knows how to win.
Nolte's really good. It's one of his best performances as a cynical kind of in the second half of his career wide receiver who, and at the beginning of the film, you should look it up on YouTube, The opening credits is him the morning after the game. And this great music and him going from his bed to the bathtub. And, you know, and it cuts to him and he feels a particular part of his body. And you see in flashbacks what happened to that part of the body during the game. You know, it's just a brutal account of what happens in football. And also the fact that because this is not the Dallas Cowboys of the 60s and 70s, but it talks about the off-field antics, wild parties, a lot of sex, a lot of drugs, a lot of knuckle-dragging amongst the guys. But also the weird camaraderie between wide receiver and quarterback. Anyway, it's a really, really good film. And it's still rent today, I think, as far the excesses of football. So anyway, he did the screenplay for that. He also did the screenplay version of Mommy Dearest with Faye Dunaway, which you don't yet, Cobe. Watch some earlier Faye Dunaway films like Thomas Crown Affair and Network, and then you can see Mommy Dearest. Have you ever seen it?
I've never seen Mommy Dearest.
Oh, my goodness. Well, not right now. I'm going to say not right now. So, okay. We have Stacy here in studio, and Max is asleep now. So that's why I brought up the one documentary, because, well, he's not going to
understand.
He's a baby. Yeah. How old is Mac?
He is a little more than three months and 1 week old.
3 months. So, and you've been back to work a couple weeks.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I was lucky I got to take a good, nice amount of time off.
Thank you, WFYI.
Thank you, WFYI.
And Maya is enjoying her baby brother.
She loves Mac dearly. Yes. Yay. She's a good big sister for sure.
So we were supposed to have another guest in studio, and hopefully we'll have him back sometime. But Kobe's also going to be an uncle very soon, so this could actually go to you as well. But this is good cinematic parenting advice from the old guy, and you do it a little bit already with Maya. When you have a baby, I believe you can watch anything in front of the child for the first year.
Yes.
The first year, because they're still...
I hope so.
Well, hey, mine's 13, and she has yet to bring up the fact that I watched The Wild Bunch with her when she was 6 months old. So if it happens, I'll let you know, but I don't think it's happening. Yeah. So now, to be fair, I know you did this as well. You did this with Maya, and you're kind of going through this with Mac right now.
Yes, I would feed the baby and watch True Blood episodes. Like, surely this is fine.
Yeah, well... I say if Maya's or Max dressing like Anna Paquin, then we got a problem. But that's not happening. So I think the first year you can watch.
I think so too. Yes.
And by the way, I appreciate your candor on that. I thought, True Blood. Oof.
Yeah.
The turning point that happened at my house, and Lynn will back me up on this. Emma was probably a year and a half, maybe, and this was at the old house. And Emma was in one of those playing saucer.
We call them space saucers.
Is that what they're called?
Space saucer sounds
something.
Cooler.
Well, I'm sure we're breaking product placement codes or whatever. But it's, you know, one of those things that, you know, the kid can sit and stand and it's safe and it's got, you know, 20 different things for the kid to spin around and play with. So I was on the couch. And I could watch the movie, and I could look and see her right by the kitchen, so everything's fine. And I went through a period where whatever is at the top of my watch pile, I'm watching that. Well, that ended that day when Lynn came home, and she came into the living room and saw me watching The Exorcist. And she went over and grabbed Emma and went straight upstairs. And I finally had the pause. Now, to be fair, if I remember the scene that was happening, it wasn't one of the heavy scenes, I don't think. I'm sure Lynn will tell me exactly which scene it was.
Yep.
I don't think it's the scenes with the soup or the crucifixion or the crucifix or the spinning head. Those who know that movie know what I'm talking about. But anyway, I will check with Lynn. I'm sure I'm wrong. But it was that, okay, fine, I will start watching what I watch with the little one. So,
well, and that makes it hard because we have two children who are kind of night owls. And so we struggle a little bit with our, like, we've become much more discerning with our movies, like in terms of if we'll finish the movie or not.
Yep.
We've split movies where, you know, we watch half and half.
Two-parter. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I have found we've been watching almost more television than movies lately because
they're shorter.
It's just shorter.
I get it.
And We're also like pretty addicted to Game of Thrones, and Breaking Bad, and these
How's
shows.
How's Maya liking those?
Loves them. Loves them.
She's kidding, folks.
No, Maya's favorite. So Maya was a superstar of her preschool the past 2 weeks. And so we had to go through and name favorites, right?
Right.
And oh man, my kid is so into princesses and it drives me crazy. However, so I did not know what the answer to what is your favorite movie going to be. And without any coaching from me, she said The Princess Bride. I was like, yes,
okay,
you go, kid.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she watches some, like, she's got poor taste. I mean, she has, like, no, she has, like,
Do you say this to your child?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Okay, listen, for Halloween, she wanted to be, what, a princess. I said to her, you probably need to be a little more creative than that because she's a princess every day. She always puts on her princess dresses.
Yep, I've seen those pictures.
So she came up with Batman princess. So, I mean,
great.
I just feel like I'm pushing her.
She also did the Christian Bale voice. Trick or treat. And don't walk in her eye line. She'll chew you out. So she's still in the princesses.
She's still into
princesses. But at least Princess Buttercup's got a little spine to her.
Yes, yes. And she quotes the movie, and I think it's the most adorable thing, because I loved that movie when I was a kid. So.
And we love it when kids quote stuff that we like.
Of course.
Like when Emma first quoted, kick the baby from South Park. Don't kick the baby.
Yes.
Yeah, I did that. Now, speaking of Maya, you've had a couple things where, and we were talking about taking our kids to the movies.
Yes.
I've been taking Emma since she was probably about 3 or 4. And so parents or nieces and or uncles and aunties, sometimes if you take a little one to a movie, you got to have it in your head. There's a distinct possibility you might not make it through. And you're just going to have to suck it up and,
yep,
you know, and don't go to the, and that's the other, that, not that myth of if you go after under a half hour, you get your money back. No, you don't. You're not getting that. So sometimes you're just going to have to pay for peace of mind for the kid and for yourself.
Yes.
And you had this happen.
I mean, mostly I just pay so I can get some popcorn and then whatever happens after that.
Oh, so well, that's what they want, because they really make their money with the concessions, not with
popcorn.
The movie. So that's good. So, but you had this happen recently with Maya and Big Hero 6.
Big Hero 6. So, you know, Maya's seen a lot of movies, and we've gone to the movie theater to see a lot of movies. And from the previews, it felt like Big Hero 6 was probably something other than it was, right?
I described it as if you combined The Iron Giant, The Incredibles, and Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So she decided she wanted to see it. So Maya and I go to the movie. It's just the two of us. It was a mommy Maya girl's little date out.
And she's 4.
She's 4. So we go to the movies, and the bad guy in the movie is pretty imposing.
Which, by the way, you don't see him in the ad campaigns.
You do not see him in the ad campaigns.
No. And also the fact that there's most of the ad campaigns is the young boy with Baymax.
Yes.
So what happens to the character's brother?
Oh my gosh!
And this is
all we've been talking about for the past 2 weeks. Can I say what happens?
Well,
to
it
the
happens
brother?
Early on, so I guess you're not giving away the ending. But go ahead.
Yeah. No. So Hero's brother dies. He like this building catches on fire, and Hero's brother runs into the building to save his professor, and the building explodes into this like fiery explosion, and then they have the funeral, and it's really sad for a few minutes, and yeah, that's all we've been talking about for 2 weeks is how
that really shaked Maya up.
Yeah, how Hero's brother died. And, like, literally, we're driving down the street and she sees a building that looks similar to the building in Big Hero 6, and she's like, "That looks like the building where Hero's brother died."
Wow,
so,
man, way to go! Congratulations, Disney.
I know, way to go, Disney. But you know, and we haven't really dealt with that because, like, in Frozen, the parents die, right? But they're like lost at sea.
But you don't see the result of
right,
the death,
right?
And that's kind of a common thing in Disney. Say what you will about that. You know, the prince.
Yeah,
absolutely. Usually, the mother or the father, they're gone.
It's
they're
just implied.
Nothing.
Yes.
Right.
So,
your mother would have been proud. And that means they're dead.
Exactly. Well, so we made it about halfway through the movie, I would say, and
also the villain is in a dark cloak with a kabuki mask.
Yes, and then part of the movie are these little magnets. They're like micro magnets that like all form together to make like waves or kind of whatever you think of it can make. And so anyway, I was really surprised that Maya was as scared as she was, because usually she's like a pretty brave kid, you know? Like, I remember we went to How to Train Your Dragon, which is kind of dark also.
Yeah.
And, you know, big dragons flying. And she sat on my lap and hugged me the whole time, but she watched the whole movie.
Cool.
But this, I mean, we made it to the first scene where the bad guy shows up. We made it through that scene in the warehouse. And then the second scene, she's like, Mommy, we got to go. I got to leave.
She said that. She wasn't bursting into tears. She just kind of knew she had reached her limit.
Yeah, she was done. And she like got up and marched down those stairs. And she wanted to sit in the very back of the movie theater. So we like marched down all the way down.
It happens.
And out, you know. And I was saying to Matt earlier, so I'll say it now. But
that's why you're doing the show.
That's why I'm doing this, yeah. No, it's funny because I really think two things. I think like she'll be able to watch that movie at home with no problem. I think like it was this combination of being in this big dark theater and the bad guy was so big on the movie screen.
Right.
And also she was with me, and I think like she's more brave for Eric, her dad, my husband. Which is funny. I mean,
paid money for this kid. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, Eric, yeah. I'm kidding.
Well, no, he probably would not. I'm more of a softie, so he probably would have been like, "Suck it up, kid." Like being scared is part of going to the movies.
As Marie Sendak said, "Let them wet their pants."
Yeah, but wait, I mean, that's you just wonder like when it's okay to tell your kid,
right.
Like, no, it's okay to be a little scared. Like that's part of the like fun of the cinema.
So I think I might go online and have people tell their stories about this. I talked with Melissa Davis, producer emeritus here at Film Sociology. She had that happen with E.T. She told me she was 3 when she saw E.T. in the theater and scared the daylights out of her.
I was little too, yeah. I remember crying.
She didn't watch it again until she was 7. And then as she watched it, she went, oh, this is what I was scared of?
Uh-huh.
So now the other one, you took Maya to a Lego movie.
The Lego movie.
Not scary, but different impact.
Well, I think we had to leave because she was bored. I mean, I think it was just like a little bit older than she is. And I think she just couldn't just sit there and watch it. And so Eric and I, like, we didn't know the big ending, like, what happens at the end. We didn't know.
Which is really smart,
by the way. Which is really smart and great. And we didn't know for, like, several months, you know, until it came out on DVD. And then it comes out on DVD. And, like, the kid, she was like, this is boring. I don't like this movie. We got to go.
So,
this is really probably, I mean, it's probably verbatim what she said. Like, she was like, this is boring. Let's go, right?
We need to get Maya in studio for that, to have that record that reaction.
Seriously. So we left, and I was kind of annoyed by that one, and Eric was like, whatever. You know, it was like $30 popcorn, basically. So then when it comes out on DVD, we're flipping through the like online rental. Like
right.
We were just looking through the movies, and Maya's like, oh my gosh, it's the Lego movie. I love that movie. Let's watch it. I was like, you did not like that movie. And so now it's one of her favorite movies. She watches it all the time. She sings Everything is Awesome. She loves Emmett. She calls every Lego man Emmett. So I think that it's just like the difference between like having to sit still in a big dark theater
right.
and all you're doing is watching a movie versus like, I'm going to watch this movie and I'm going to color, I'm going to eat a snack, or I'm going to, you know, go do this.
It's Bianca with Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Kobe's like, I'm bored. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here.
I'm still not watching that at home, though.
Before I bust. Anyway.
No. I am not a fan of that movie either. And I read the book.
You read the book?
I read the book.
All
yeah.
1,000 pages of
I am
it?
I'm such a book nerd. Yes, wow. I read it all. And I read the sequel. Scarlet.
Still gone with the
still gone, still
didn't
windy.
Didn't come back.
still don't give a damn. But that's interesting because Lynn and I were talking, and we took Emma to March of the Penguins.
Uh-huh.
So she was about 4, and I think this was like our first attempt to show her a non-cartoon in theaters.
Uh-huh.
And she just kind of got fussy, and it wasn't... It just really wasn't happening, and she was kind of cranky. I think it was also we did it in mid-afternoon, so she hadn't had her nap. So Lynn and I had to review it for work. So I think her and Lynn went to the lobby, and Lynn kind of stewed a bit, and I watched it and really enjoyed it. And I thought, well, between the penguin, because when Emma was young, and I would bring her in to record if I had to record Art of the Matter or something like that, and I needed to be in a studio. I would put her in front of a computer and we would ask, kitties, puppies, or pandas, and we Google image, and that would satisfy her. That would she wouldn't shut the radio station down by touching buttons. So I thought, well, if she likes penguins and that sort of, maybe this will. And it didn't quite happen. But then we rented it, and she dug it.
Yeah.
So I think the focus part, maybe a little bit of the content, and being in a dark room, I'm sure. And the ad campaign.
Well, live action movies are hard too. So Maya was really, she really liked The Princess Bride. She was really into it. I keep trying to get her to watch Annie. Oh no.
She
will not.
Which Annie?
The old Annie.
Like, why?
What do you mean why?
Show her the one made for television.
Oh, there's a new one coming out.
Yeah, I know. That's coming out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, like, so I was thinking maybe we would try it.
Say, are you trying to show her the old one in preparation to go see the new one?
No, or? I just wanted to rewatch Annie I loved that movie when I was a kid. And Mary Poppins. And really? Why? What?
Because I love the director. That's John Huston. John Huston had no business making a musical.
Okay.
I'm old guy now. If you're going to have a musical, if you're going to have dance numbers in a musical, I want to see it. Don't give me a lot of close ups and cutaways. If you're going to have those people dancing, chorus line's worse.
When I was eight, it really
hit you at the right time. All right, fine, I get it. But there was a remake for television with Kathy Bates.
Maybe we'll try to find that.
And Rob Marshall directed it, who would later direct Chicago, and he's directing Into the Woods.
So he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's kind of knows what he's doing. Okay, how are we on time, Cobe?
We got 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay. Well, Stacey, I'm glad. It's interesting. That's an interesting angle, especially with kids.
Well, you're always. I mean, I'm such a fan of pop culture, of movies, of television, and so like just trying to figure out like how to introduce it to your kid, when to, like, if you're being a bad parent by showing them X, Y, and Z.
I'm sorry. Look who you're talking about. You're not being a bad parent. You're fine.
Yeah.
I was scared and impressed that you're watching True Blood with
Maya. I know.
Anyway.
I had to. I was addicted. I was like in the middle of the best like season one and season two are really good. So
last week, and yes, this is, you know, it's a big deal. Not really. If we're talking about a Lifetime movie. And only probably the other thing in common was that Kobe and I actually watched this, not together. But last week on Lifetime, they premiered the Grumpy Cat Worst Christmas Ever movie.
It was on Lifetime?
It was on Lifetime. And when I was on the air, I was doing the house party. And, I stay on Facebook and Twitter during the show. And that movie blew up Twitter. And I heard somebody refer to it as the Sharknado of Lifetime. And I finally watched it. No, it's not.
No.
No. And besides the fact that the voice of Grumpy Cat is Aubrey Plaza, no disrespect toward Ms. Plaza. I guess I never envisioned a gender for Grumpy Cat, but Aubrey Plaza wasn't my 50th choice. I don't know who.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Didn't need to be 2 hours long.
An hour 20 with a lot of commercials.
Right.
But the film... Yeah, I get Aubrey Plaza because she has kind of a dry, sarcastic humor. So I guess I can see, and she really phoned it in, literally. I guess if you're playing Grumpy Cat, you can do that. But this is me saying way too much self-deprecation, way too inside. I mean, there's references in the movie that you should go on Twitter and talk about it. And there's a segment which goes and talks about the products that you can buy online.
Yeah.
Tommy Wiseau doesn't tell you to go on Twitter and buy room products during the room.
No.
So I know it wanted to be Sharknado and it wanted to be fun bad. And it's a cat in a pet store. And it's a pet store that's not doing well financially. But somehow they get a dog worth $1 million to stay in their pet shop. And then bad rock stars who want to be criminals who are arguing over who's a better Van Halen singer, Gary Cherone or Sammy Hagar. I don't know who wrote this. Who writes that? And they're going to steal the dog. And there's a couple subplots involving the mall cop and the 12-year-old girl who works at the store that becomes friends with Grumpy Cat because... Can talk to Grumpy Cat.
It's
and the
like
mom,
Littlest Pet Shop.
Maybe. And the mom who works there with the elf... I mean, this if you're going to cash in on Grumpy Cat... And Emma even said this. Emma watched about half of it, and she goes, they should have made this last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, yeah, you're right. You make a half-hour Christmas special... with Grumpy Cat. You don't try to make a movie.
That's what's so annoying to me, though. Like, don't try to cash in on it at all. Like, on a movie.
Remember when they made the movie about the crocodile hunter? Yeah. So, but yeah, they made it, and I guess they're repeating it this weekend. So if you missed it the first, well, in case you missed it,
here it is again.
So yeah, that was unfortunate. We did Grumpy Cat. That's my nickname for Stacey because she's so not grumpy unless she talks about Kristen Stewart, her favorite. She hates Miss Stewart with the heat of a thousand suns. So anyway, yeah, we did Grumpy Cat, but just not this movie.
Not the movie.
No. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, words to live by.
Greatest people!
Mess that up.
Zardoz.
We're living with it!
Stacy, Mac, thank you so much. He did great.
He did great.
So yeah, we can talk about movies with a baby. Trust me, Mac's not going to throw this back in my face. You talked about a life of dirty movies while I was here. Hi, Mac. Can you say something?
Say hi.
Nope. Not a train.
I'm trying to put his mouth baby. On the microphone.
It's a baby, not a train seal.
Just confused baby face at a microphone.
The singer-songwriter? Got a highway named after him. You know what? You are Babyface. All right, go see a good movie. You deserve it.
And
a big salute to my gang at Bedford Falls. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California. See you soon.